Greg brought up a point for those of you that he said my left brain, left slow track, couldn't help but look at your information. And the fact that 1/6 of a second and 40 milliseconds, 1/6 of a second is faster. Now, and then I went back and read it, Greg. It's the context. I'm not comparing that the slow track operates at 40 milliseconds, because that's faster than 1/6 of a second. But that the process for the fast track brain, it takes about 1/6 of a second to go through all four levels. I'm not compare. Don't compare and go, oh, that's why that's faster, that's slower. The slow track takes about 40 milliseconds for your conscious brain to become aware there's a puppy for sale. And that information, remember, it first comes from your fast track brain, drops down into your slow track brain, which it's going to take from the time that information elevator gets there about 40 milliseconds. For that to be, you become aware of it. Then you got to process it. And that process is slower than what happens at the fast track. So just because you're aware there's a puppy for sale, your slow track brain is going to process that. And we'll keep going, and you'll see that as we go, most likely. So this next section is the summary. We're not going to go through that because we just went through the four levels in detail. The four levels grow and develop one floor at a time. So if you're looking at this and you can see that you're stuck at level two because you had a traumatic childhood, you have PTSD, and it's still affecting you, and man, I'm stuck on level two, there's hope. There's always hope. And when a baby is born, the third and fourth level of the brain's fast track system isn't even formed. Most of the major growth of the right brain is finished by 18 months of age. Our brains must be trained as it grows. If we are to have a mature fourth floor where executive function occurs, we must have a strong third floor. Most of our troubles are a result of defects on the third floor. Remember, the third floor is attunement. That's where we learn to attune relationally. The third floor brain system was built during the first 6 months of life. So Benjamin already has his attunement center built. And that comes as a result of his caregivers being glad to be with him and doing the left eye to left eye. He downloads the brain of mom and dad, and mostly mom, truly, it's mostly mom, because mom feeds him and changes his diaper and bathes him and talks to him, plays with him more hours than dad would have access, generally, as a general rule. The right orbital prefrontal cortex, protecting what we value, is the function of the right orbital prefrontal cortex, which is the last part of the brain to develop. Its purpose is to grow a joyful identity for us and our people. This is a part of our brain where gentle protector leadership is grown and trained. It's the role of a mature identity. Gentle protector responses are all learned and are quite advanced. Predatory responses are wired into our brains at birth, and they are simplistic and fast. So, and you know, most of us have had children. You don't have to teach a child how to throw a tantrum, right? They may have never seen anybody throw a tantrum, and they know how to throw a tantrum. And they don't, and some know how to be sneaky or lie, you don't have to teach it to them. It's wired into us because of the fall. Yeah. because of Adam. Both gentle protector and predatory responses are determined by how you respond. There's a typo to weakness. How do you respond when someone upsets you? How do you speak to people who hurt, offend, ignore, or overlook you? What do you think about them? Not even what do you say, but what do you think about those people? Are you looking down on them, offended, blaming? Your response to upset is what determines if you're responding as a mature, gentle protector or a vindictive predator. If you want to know, you got to look at the people that have offended you, that you've got offended with, to know whether you're genuinely a gentle protector, mature. You could be immature and on your journey, but if you're a mature, gentle protector with the relational skills operating in your life, the mature 19 relational skills, you're going to be able to remain Christ-like when somebody offends you, when somebody does something that is just off the wall wrong. That's how you know for sure. And if you don't know, ask somebody that's real close to you. They have seen you and know whether you're actually operating as a gentle protector or not. When we get upset, generally what most often happens is the fast-track brain responds like a predator, while the slow track is trying to control the reactions and act like a Christian or a respectable human being. If your slow track brain has assimilated the information, the knowledge of what it looks like to be a Christian. And we can so see how that scenario can set somebody up to become religious, where on the outside they do what they believe they need to do in order to be seen as a good Christian, but yet their heart is far from it. The good news is we can actually train our brains to respond as a gentle protector. Yeah, I know. There's hope. Because predatory responses are wired into our brain, they will never go away. The solution is not to suppress predatory thoughts, but to find a better response to weakness in ourselves and in others. That is done by developing a strong sense of how I and my kind of people respond to the weaknesses of others. And we identify that and feed that into our brains. This is how I respond to, and you fill in the blank. And you can rewire your brain. You can't break a habit. They now say you can't break a habit. You have to refill it. So you have a rut in your brain, that white matter that is hardwired. It's wrapped and insulated, protected, so that when something happens, you automatically respond this way. The way, if you've hardwired predatory responses or possum responses into your brain, what has to happen is you have to use those mirror neurons, be with gentle protectors, watch how they respond when XYZ happens. And if that response is gentle protector, you observe it, those mirror neurons go, oh, that's what you want to look like. Okay. And you do it enough that you actually fill in the rut, that neuron, you fill that habit in with the new habit, the new action that you want to take. So let's use an example. If you're not accustomed to attuning to people, you listen, but you don't really take the time to ask their brain, how are you feeling? What are you doing? What do you see? What are you thinking? You don't take the time to do that mindset, but you just kind of half listen. You read the newspaper while you're talking to you, or you do whatever while your husband's talking to you, or so you form that rut. For you to stop that behavior, you have to consciously determine what your new behavior looks like. And it's really helpful if you can find somebody else that already has that skill and you hang around with them. It could be your spouse. And so as you do that, your brain forms that new habit and lays it on top of the old one so that you respond with attunement. And your husband talks, and you stop what you're doing, and you turn and look in his eyes or her eyes, and you listen, and you use your body language. Because remember, it's not about words. Your fast track doesn't use words. You watch their body language, their tone of voice. Your brain is telling their brain, I care about you. Right now, you're the most important person on the planet, and I hear you. I see you. I understand your internal experience right now. I join you in your emotions, and I'm really glad to be with you right now. And your brain's saying that, your body language is saying that, and that person, if they are open to you, can receive it. And then you have mindsight. That's how we experience the Lord in your God encounters. That's how it works. Your brain is made, designed by Yahweh, for you to be able to have mindsight with Yahweh. And he says to you, I see you, I hear you, I understand your internal experience. I'm glad to be with you. I join you in your emotions. I love you, you know. And as he does that, we're able to respond to him. Oh, I feel seen. I feel heard. I feel understood. You know me. You know, that kind of feeling. I belong. And that's a mutual mindset with our Heavenly Father and with Yeshua. And that's what God encounters are. And you go, it's real. And if you don't believe it's real, you keep doing it long enough, you'll have one of those encounters that are off the chart, and you sit back and you'll say, I couldn't have made that up in a million years. I would have never thought of that. And that happens over and over and over. I get to hear bunches of them. To where I remember in the very, very beginning of the Lord encountering me in my consecrated imagination, this place in my fast track brain. Now I know where it is. It's the prefrontal cortex. But I remember this encounter. It was just crazy. Wow. And I wasn't accustomed to good things in my life. I tended to expect I wasn't good enough for anything. And so I had this encounter, and I'm sitting there, and I'm going, that can't be real. That just can't be real. That's just too good to be true. It's just not real. And I hear the Lord speak to my heart, and he says, Rhonda, your imagination is good, but it's not that good. And I went, oh, you know what? That's true. I would have never, if I had created that, it would have been a negative response because I was wired that way. Because this was early on when I was still so depressed. And instead, it was this life-giving, incredible revelation of Yahweh's love for me. And so, little did I know, so many years ago, that there actually was anatomy to support what was happening in my encounters with the Lord. When fear takes over, every time the fast track runs out of a relational joy, the elevator gets stuck at the third floor. When no one agrees with us or wants to join us, we become afraid. Your brain only knows two ways to generate motivational fuel, either a joy bond or a fear bond. When I have a joy bond with someone, I look forward to being with them or with him or her. I feel joy just thinking about being with them. However, when the second floor assessment center gets the message that the person I'm bonded to is bad or scary, then fear takes over instead of joy. Or if I'm afraid I've upset somebody, or somebody doesn't like me, or somebody's gonna disagree with me, same thing will happen. And I will wear a mask that makes me look the way I need to look in order to get what I want out of that relationship. And we probably all can look at that and go, oh yeah. Or yeah, for me, I used to, like, if I'd be in a store and I'd see somebody from my past or something, man, I'd disappear so fast around the corner and go to the other aisle, leave my buggy in the store and go out the door. Because I was buggy. In the South, that's what you call them. I came here and they called them shopping carts. I'm like, a shopping cart? They're buggies. So, yeah. All right. Here's what looks like. Let's look at this diagram here. When fear overtakes my joy, my elevator gets stuck between the second and third floors. That means I am non-relational, fixated on the problem, waiting for people and or the problem to go away, or I'll run away from it myself, unable to imagine relational solutions for problems, experiencing negative emotions more intensely. And that's what happens when your master fast-track system goes offline. The solution is not for leaders to do whatever makes them happy. Quite the opposite. When fear is the dominant motivation for any group, that group will become toxic. When any leader is motivated by fear, he or she will burn out and spread dysfunction into his or her group. The important point is how we solve problems. Will we solve them relationally, creatively, as a group? Or will we solve them in isolation, avoiding shame and any perception of failure while hiding behind a mask that makes us look good? A fast-track system produces isolation to the degree it was trained in isolation. A person may feel isolated in a crowded room. The way to know if isolation is present in a group is by the joy levels in the group. Are the people in that group glad to be together? The higher the joy level when a group gathers for a task, the lower the isolation level will be felt in the group. So it's so important when you get together with people that you express that you're glad to be together. Mm-hmm. And it's catchy. You might have five people in the group and one of them's having a tough day, but all four are still so glad to be with that fifth person that's having a tough day. And they express that and bring them in belonging to where hopefully they're able to come to that place of, you know, I don't feel so great right now, I'm having a whatever, but I'm really glad to be with all of you. And that will be the response if that fifth person has any relational skills that they can tap into, or depending on their joy capacity level. The greater their joy capacity, the faster they can be brought into that I'm glad to be with you group. The smaller the joy capacity, the longer it'll take, and it might not happen, depending on. But the other four people can still attune, still be there, and then reach out to them and keep reaching out and keep reaching out until their joy capacity grows, etc. And you keep getting together. You don't kick them out of the group because they're a downer, right? You love them, and your heart is to bring them in and bring them closer. Now, there are exceptions to that. If somebody starts becoming predatory in that group, you got a problem. And, you know, the difference between, like we talked about, predators and possums. Possums aren't attacking people. Possums aren't people that have possum-like actions. They're just trying to keep from being hurt. They just want to, they don't want to be eaten alive. And they're terrified that they're going to be eaten alive. But a person with predatory behaviors are out to stay on the top of the food chain. They will do whatever they need to do to stay up here over you. And they'll go to all kinds of, and it depends, you know, it just really depends on the person. And the more predatory-like they are, the more dangerous they are to your community. All right. Ways to test your fast track system's function. The executive function, the fourth floor, fast track system can shut down because of fatigue, stress, depression, or just from feeling overwhelmed. That feeling overwhelmed thing, I've watched it. I've watched that thing in action. When somebody's feeling overwhelmed, it's so quick to, they drop immediately. That elevator goes from fourth floor down to the basement, where they become non-relational and try to fix the problem or attack the person, depending on, right? Drugs can also shut down your fast track. Our brains will quickly slam the door shut anytime it sees someone who upsets us or where we hear about a problem that we don't want to look at. And you can't stop it. It's automatic. We won't realize our fast track system is shut down unless we test it. Some of the best tests are, number one, we talked about this before, curiosity. Ask yourself, am I really interested in what others are thinking or saying right now? Or am I busy rehearsing my responses or opinions? You know, often when somebody's talking, we're not really even listening to what they're saying. We're thinking about how we're going to respond. Often. That is your slow track left brain function when you're doing that. Another question. Is our relationship bigger than the problem? Am I thinking about how this event will strengthen our relationship? Or is my focus on how to solve the problem or make it stop, make it go away? I don't feel alone. Am I able to remember the people who would be at my side even when they're not available? And I can feel encouraged by that truth that, you know, they're not here right now and I feel alone in this. Everybody feels like they're against me, but can I remember? Oh, wait a minute. I've got a group of people that know me. They understand me. They will attune to me. They're not going to judge me or criticize me. Appreciation. Am I able to enjoy smelling the roses and feel appreciation? Shalom. Am I able to perceive the underlying shalom, that calm, all is going to be all right? Am I confident that I will know or figure out how to handle this situation well? The better trained and stronger our executive brain has become, the better able we are to keep the executive functions working well during times of upset, stress, and problems. Warning signs of slow track being in charge. Increasing isolation. For example, do you find yourself thinking, that's okay, I'd rather do it by myself anyway? Or, everyone left me alone to do all the work. Here I go again. You know, that thinking. That's a slow track increasing attention is given to mental warnings of negative outcomes. For example, if I don't do this, then such and such will happen. For example, I'll get a poor review at work, or my spouse is going to get angry, or I'll be rejected, etc. That's a slow track thinking. Or am I becoming predatory? This happens when weaknesses are criticized, power actions are used in an unfair or selfish way, and when people look out for number one. So what do we do? Healing opens the door for building a better system with good relational fast-track habits, but it doesn't suddenly provide the critical, necessary habits that we never learned as a child. The first step is to determine whether we need healing or training. And you may need both, right? Without healing, the fast-track brain often can't be trained. Without training, the brain often can't recover from times of upset. The right hemisphere of our brain is the nonverbal side, and it's where our deepest feelings are stored and where our attachments are formed. All capital letters, all attachments, whether abusive or life-giving, are formed in the fast-track system. A well-trained fast-track system operates in a protective, life-giving way to the attachments that it forms. A poorly trained fast-track master system tends to be predatory, defensive, fear-bound, and selfish. This explains why so many people are often overcome with unpleasant emotions, operate in isolation, react without thinking, and take advantage of others. Gentle protector leaders not only have to overcome these issues in themselves, but they're happy to help their people overcome them as well, even before leading is possible. Wow, right? It's a big deal. On fear, the untrained, fast-track brain operates in isolation, which is directly related to fear. Your brain fears any situation that will leave you on your own. Your brain avoids anything that leads you to feelings of abandonment, rejection, lack of help, or overwhelming emotions. Instead of knowing you have people who will help you, instead of remembering who you really are and how you are to respond, you are left to solve the problems on your own in isolation and fear. The most difficult time to lead is when each person feels that they are on their own and feels isolated. Everyone just wants the problem to go away or stop. That is fear right there. Remember, the fear mode causes the fast-track system to shut down so it doesn't send a notice to your slow-track conscious brain. Isolation has already taken over the slow-track conscious brain. That means your slow-track brain is left without any guidance and without warning. Remember, because your fast-track guides you. It reminds you and encourages you to be true to who your identity really is and to the identity of the group that you're part of. So if the slow track notices anything at all because the fast track shut down because of fear, if the slow track notices anything at all, your VLE will tell yourself a story like, I like to do things by myself. It's okay. I can take care of this without help, or I prefer it that way, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Your VLE will tell you a story. It will justify why you're acting the way you're acting and why you're doing what you're doing, and it will blame the other person or that situation for your behavior. It will make it their fault. That's how that works. That's your slow track brain in operation without the fast track helping. That creates isolation, and it's non-relational. Focuses on the problem, focuses on what the other person did or didn't do that they should have done. The management assistant runs the left brain slow track. Let's look at that one now. A healthy fast track executive system doesn't do most of the brain's work. As long as we are being true, joyful, and our relational selves, the executive fast track system simply watches and learns. Remember that the master executive system tracks our identity by operating faster than conscious thought. That's why we never have to stop and ask ourselves, who am I? Unless you're in your slow track brain, then you might go, well, who am I? Because you don't have your fast track brain to tell you. Most of the brain's work is done in the brain's management assistance office, located in the left prefrontal cortex. Remember, the fast track's in the right. Now we're switching to the left part of the brain. It burns much of the brain's energy. Our conscious left hemisphere management system makes us constantly aware of what we're thinking and what work is being done in the left prefrontal cortex management office. Our management assistant works with tools such as concepts, plans, agreements, contracts, rules, problem identification, problem solving, and choices. As long as these plans are true to our identities, the fast track executive in the right side simply watches. Doesn't have to work. While conscious speed activities do solve problems, it does not guarantee that the most important problems are solved, or that problems are solved in the least harmful way, or that our group remains together and on track. Problems will seem more important than my relationships in the slow track system. We won't be aware of the fact that we may be part of the problem. Our management system will continue trying to get results and seeing anyone who disagrees with us as part of the problem. When operating alone, the slow track manager blames, shames, explains, defends, or solves the problem using whatever makes sense at the moment. When others don't agree, the leader's relational circuits will shut down. In leadership, there are two primary targets. Target number one is building group identity. It answers the question, who are we and how is it like us to act? It creates joy-based, high motivation, high bonding, and high sacrifice. That's target number one. That's your identity. That's your fast track brain. Target number two is getting results. It's by far the most popular and may seem non-negotiable way of leading for leaders. Number two, management slow track creates fear-based, low motivation, low bonding, and low sacrifice. Those two are supposed to be working together, hand in hand, in tandem. But if fear comes along, you are going, unless you have really created a strong, gentle protector, fast track, executive function brain. If you haven't done that, you will default to the slow track where it's fear-based, low motivation, low bonding, and low sacrifice. It's not thinking about the other person. It's me, 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 me. What do I need right now to get this problem under control? Because I'm feeling scared, or I'm feeling challenged, or I'm feeling unseen, unheard, nobody cares, I'm alone, all of that. Strong group identity is our primary goal. Motivated by joy, your group understands that excellence is just part of being who they are and what they do. When we make results our goal, we create a fear-based motivation for our performance, which creates a toxic environment. A group's identity is formed by answering these two questions. Who are my people? And how is it like us to act? A healthy group identity is characterized by joy. I'm glad to be with you. If you have a group getting together and everybody dreads having to come to the meeting or get together, you got a problem. You know, that means there's lack of joy. People aren't glad to be together. They're not looking forward to coming together. And if your group is running on the slow track management system, people aren't going to want to be together. Who wants to do that, right? That's work. But if they're getting together because they're glad to be together, they don't view that as work. That's enjoyable. That's life-giving. So you can look at what you're part of and by those two descriptions, know whether or not you're part of a group that has a high joy identity or are they management? Are they just trying to get a job done? Or do they just have a goal? Let's get together because I want to do a fundraiser for cute puppies that need a home, right? And you don't even like puppies, but you got to go because you're part of that group. You're not going to have joy being there, and there's a good chance others might not either. Like I said, a healthy group identity is characterized by joy, and that means people will like belonging to the group. They will look forward to being together. They understand that no matter what may happen, the group will work it out together, and individuals won't be left alone in their distress. In fact, groups with a healthy identity shine brightest during times of trouble. That's when you really see that gentle protector value when there's tough times in a group, when there's upset, when somebody blew it or somebody whatever, and then everybody comes in closer or somebody's got a crisis going on and they are glad to be together. That's why it's so critical that if you have a group and you're leading an identity group, that any kind of issues that come up when you're together, you don't just sweep them under the rug. You address them with love and kindness, and you allow people to own what they need to own, and everybody's free to share their opinion or to share their thoughts or their feelings about the event, and everybody leaves loving each other even more than when they before they that happened. And I've learned that if you don't do that, and let's say somebody doesn't respond in a Christ-like manner when you're in that group and the whole group saw it and it's not addressed, everybody in that group that saw it has an opinion about that thing. And if they have any kind of possum tendencies, they're going to pull away from that person. If they have any predatory tendencies, they're liable to come at them. And it might not happen for 6 months, and something happens, and it triggers them, and now they blast double barrel at that person because they held on to that offense. And so it's just not wise or healthy to not, when you're part of a group, to not make sure shalom remains. It won't remain if you sweep things under the rug or you pretend like they didn't happen or you see something and you don't address it with loving kindness appropriately. If it's done in front of everybody, it needs to be addressed in front of everybody. Now, if it's done one-on-one, then just those two people need to talk it out and work through it. All right. Whew, how you doing?
Hang in there.
Yeah? It's eye-opening, isn't it? It's like, wow. Everybody good? You still got some more capacity for about 20 more minutes?
Yep.
All right, let's do mutual mind states. Fast track elevator stops at the third floor for a process that only happens here. Without this critical process, we immediately stop acting like someone others want to be with. And this process is called mutual mind state. This is the attunement floor, remember? Everything that's important for identity, group identity. Now, your marriage is a group identity. Your friendship group is a group identity. Your church is meant to be a group identity. Okay? So everything that's important for identity, group identity, motivation, discipline, activating one's potential, and tracking our vision develops in a mutual mind state. When two brains establish a mutual mind state, he or she senses the other person gets me. They understand me, they're genuine in their response, and they know me. And that's a big deal, because mutual mind state is so important that if you don't feel like people know you or see you or understand, that means you don't feel like they're attuning to you. And it might be true, and it might not be true. They may not be attuning. Or they might be, and you're not able to receive it. Mutual mind states use mirror neurons to function. These neurons are activated when they see something that resembles their activity in somebody else's mind. To some degree, these mirror neurons even work with some animals. Your dog, a horse, your cat. Your dog may notice that you're sad. Or you may notice that your cat is hungry. That's a mutual mind state. We had a cat adopt us. And Danny loves Garfield. And this cat looks the coloring of Garfield. And the cat showed up on the farm, moved into the chicken coop there where the horses are, and slept in the chicken's nest at night, ate the chicken food. It was a feral cat. I believe it was abused. It has a lot of those tendencies. Anyway, so when we moved our chickens out of the horse coop, moved into the big orchard coop, there were no chickens there. And I was just so sad for that cat. You know, and Sally worked months to try to get that cat to let us come near him and feed him, and Kelly did too. Both of them put in a whole lot of time and affection to attune to this cat. Finally, the cat would let them pet him. It took months. I don't remember. Well, and then we moved the chickens, and the cat's out there all by himself, and I'm just looking out my door because there they are. There he is, and he's sad. I'm attuning. It's so bad. So I thought, okay, Sally, let's start bringing his food. We bought him cat food and bringing him closer and closer to our house. And I didn't mean to, but I did. I couldn't help it. So we finally got him up on our porch. It was going to be wintertime. I mean, what's a girl going to do? Got a cat in the snow? That ain't right. So, and I'm allergic to cats. So I couldn't pet him, and then I was just getting all sad because I can't pet this cat. I tried to find him another home, somebody that could have him. That didn't work. We tried bringing him Shiloh, and he was depressed and not doing good. And he found his way back to my house, and that was all over. That's it. He's our cat. We named him. He's got three. I call him Samson, and so we named him Sonny, and Danny named him Garfield. We don't really know what his name is, whatever mood we're in. And so we get him out there and get him up. He went through the first winter on just a little cat bed, and that wasn't good because I look out there and there's snow on him, and I thought, that's not right. So I bought him a cat with a house and a hood. And then, come on, thank you for that attunement, Susan. So, woo, our brains are mutually connected. So then I got him that hooded one, and that was all good. Then one day I stuck my hand in there, and the floor was so cold. Who would want to sleep on a cold floor like that? So we got it. Danny's so great. He mutually mind-stated me and saw how important this was. So he gets a heating pad and figures out how to hook it up. We put it under his bed. So he's got this heated, hooded, beautiful bed at our door. And this cat doesn't go meow. He goes, when he's hungry, he comes to our door. It looks in the door at me, mutually mind states with me, and says, now, now, now. And I know he's hungry. Now. That's how he talks. So I feed him. So we have this mutual mind state. I can look at that cat and say, oh, he wants to be petted. I can't pet you. I'm so sorry. So that's why Sally, I said, Sally, he's love starved. You got to take him to Shiloh. Kelly, y'all love on him. And we tried, but he wanted to be at our house. So Toby and Josh spend time petting him, which is so great. And I tell you, Josh, since we've been having this 3-weeker here, you know, Josh usually brings Toby every morning, 3 mornings a week for me to homeschool him. And he'll sit and pet this cat, so which is wonderful. But I'm telling you, Garfield is really sad. He's been coming to our door over the weekend and just looking, and he's not wanting food. He's not saying now. He's just looking at me. And I'm like, oh, I can't pet you. Ah. So I put my arm in a sleeve the other day and went out and petted him and then put the sleeve in the jacket in the laundry. So anyway, well, come on, what you going to do, right? So anyway, that's just and I know many of you, if you have pets or horses, could give similar stories. But this is really true, that you can have a mutual mind state and just know what your pet needs at the moment. And some are more vocal than others, like Garfield, Sonny, Samson, whatever. Okay. Where am I?
That was good.
We are developing a group identity. When we are developing a group identity, we are working to activate mirror neurons in others who think like we do. A leader will strengthen that connection by responding in a way that communicates that he or she is glad to be with you. Mutual mind states are usually developed face-to-face by someone's gestures, facial expressions, voice tones, synchronized energy levels, and mirrored feelings. Mutual mind states run faster than conscious thought. Without mutual mind states, people don't share the same reactions, motivation, and direction. Leaders must be really good at developing and maintaining mutual mind states if they are to coordinate, lead, and motivate groups to work together. A mutual mind state is learned and is an acquired skill. One that is increasingly difficult to maintain, the stronger our emotions are. If we've not learned how to stay in a mutual mind state when upset happens or when life gets exciting, we will lose the use of our relational circuits and our fast-track elevator will get stuck before reaching the fourth floor. That's one reason why it's important to know how to quiet ourselves when we are upset or when we are overly excited, you know, adrenaline pumping through you. And it's important that we know how and when it's appropriate to calm ourselves. Because some people can have a difficult time being part of a group if you have an overly exuberant leader. that doesn't necessarily mean joy. You know, sometimes we think it's all about laughter and joy. It's not. It's all about, I'm glad to be with you. And sometimes the opposite is true. A leader who is non-emotional can be very difficult for people in the group as well. So mutual mind states help us connect and recognize, oh, so-and-so operates at a high energy level. Okay. And so-and-so operates at a low energy level. So when I'm with so-and-so, I dial it down. And when I'm with a person high energy, I'm free to be high energy. And I'm free to be low energy with the other person. And a gentle protector leader learns the group and who needs what, who operates best at this level. And neither of those are wrong, and neither of those are right. We're all wired by Yahweh differently, and it's okay. And it's also really important if you are a low-energy introvert, because 99.9% of introverts are low-energy. That means you don't see them get super excited and invite 50 people to their house because they're so excited about these pork chops peach, big basket of peaches they just picked from the orchard. You know, you won't see that, but boy, you get a high energy extrovert tend to be high energy, and they want everybody and their brother. Now, let's say you're married and you're an introvert and your spouse is an extrovert. That's where mutual mind states, super important. You attune to each other, and sometimes you have the capacity to come up and meet the energy of your spouse, and then sometimes that high-energy spouse comes down and recognizes that the introverted spouse needs a breather, and you mutually interdependent. That's what that is. So... And, you know, Dana used to, when we first got married, man, he was an extrovert. Oh, I couldn't keep up with him. I was an introvert, and I didn't want to be with people. He wanted to be with people, and more the better. And so we had to learn, both of us had to give and take and learn and recognize when it was good and when it wasn't. And now it's flipped. I'm not an extrovert, but I'm an ambivert on the extrovert end. And he's become quite an introvert. And it's, I'm like, who are you? You know, for years, I was like, who are you? He was always, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's do, let's explore, let's, you know. And I was perfectly happy to stay at home with a good book. And anyway, so... It's not about us becoming the same. It's about us learning and mutually honoring each other and me respecting his needs and he respects my needs. And he's great. Hey, yeah, go to that meeting. Go with so-and-so. That's fine. I'll stay home. And I've had to learn to be okay with that. And I know he's had to learn to be okay with the changes in me. Because I'm not the girl he married, and he's not the man I married. Hopefully we're better, we've certainly learned a lot and grown a lot and love each other a lot. So, did I finish that section? There's one reason why it's important to know how. Yeah, I finished that. Okay. So now on to three disciplines that help build healthy habits. If you want to learn to be a gentle protector leader, number one, imitation. This brain skill has to be mirrored. It has to be seen. It has to be learned. Number two, identity groups. You have to be part of an identity group. safe to be real. It's safe to be weak. It's safe to share your upsets, your weaknesses, etc. And number three, there must be that intimacy with Yahweh, because he's the best person to mirror. Yeshua is our best mirrored person to learn gentle protector skills and leadership, because Yeshua did it first. He modeled it for those apostles. He spent three and a half years with them, letting them mirror who he is. And then after he was resurrected, he sent the Holy Spirit to them so that they could continue to mirror who Yahweh and Yeshua is. And we have that same Holy Spirit today to do that. Okay, imitation, exercises, and relational skills. Fast track skills have to be imitated. The right side of our brains doesn't learn with words, but with imitation and practice. The identity center of the brain has an enormous amount of mirror neurons. These mirror neurons reflect what they see, and they only learn through imitation. So what you're learning right now is going into your left brain. It's going into that slow track. Now, you're learning a little bit about, hopefully, gentle protector from seeing me, from being with me right now. You're not really seeing me in action so much like one-on-one, but you're certainly seeing me in action, the stories I tell, the eye contact we're having, lunchtime, etc. To learn fast-track skills, we must admit our weaknesses and pay attention to people who have the skills we need. If you think to yourself, oh, I'm fine, I don't need, you won't learn it. You won't mirror it. When we do this, our brain learns to imitate what we see. We must identify which relational skills we lack, and that requires humility. That the 19 relational skills that are in your notebook, I strongly encourage you to go through that list and mark the skills that you're weak in or that you're lacking, and identify them. If you want to change that, you have to do that. You have to acknowledge the weakness and then intentionally pursue finding somebody that has that strength where you're weak and spend time with them and mirror it. You watch that person, you interact with them. It's crucial because your brain has to mirror those relational skills in order to learn them. And truly, all 19 of those relational skills were supposed to have been learned in childhood. But if you're like me and everybody else I've ever met, you didn't have a perfect parent. Not one of them were perfect. And so we all are lacking, and some are just weak skills. Number two, identity groups. That's the second thing needed if you're going to become a gentle protector. That you're able to share joy. Here's the 19. Oh, I repeated it. Yay. Good for me. Pat myself on the back. I was thinking when I was teaching it, oh, I wish I'd have put those here. But I did. That's awesome. So these 19 relational skills are what an identity group practices. You get a group of people that are committed to learning and practicing these skills, and you identify in your identity group who's strong in a skill that you're lacking. And you focus on that person. You watch that person. How's that person going to handle this problem? What are they going to do when this person says this? Or what are they going to do when they're really tired and they don't have, you know, how are they going to handle that? And you learn it. So let's go through these because they are a big deal, we won't get to do all of them probably. I tell you what, instead of doing that, let's have homework. You guys take the time tonight to read these 19 relational skills. Mark, circle, nobody's going to see this. This is just for you. Circle the ones that you're weak in or that are missing, may not even be part of your life. And then also maybe put a star by the ones you're strong in. And then if you're married, it'd be really good for you two to compare your results. And that's the best person you can learn from. All right? Yeah. Yay. I'm so glad I did that. That's just good. All right. I think that's it for today. Oh, well, let me finish the third one. Let's turn the page. The main reason joy is essential for propagating brain skills is that these skills won't spread without a bonded relationship. And joy, I'm glad to be with you, provides that bond. So when you learn these skills, you got to do it with somebody who's glad to be with you. Number three, intimacy with Yahweh. Here's some suggestions to increase your intimacy with Yahweh. Number one, by far, is express your love and appreciation to him. Appreciation is huge. Appreciation actually activates the right prefrontal cortex of your brain, which is where you build relationship. Have daily God encounter sessions. Read, meditate on the scriptures. Have conversational prayer, not just where you go in and give him your grocery list, but where you go in and you talk to him and then you stop and let him talk to you. You give him the time to communicate. Have times where you have no agenda except to simply be with him. I call it times with no words, where I go in, I'm no words. He told me one time, he said, Rhonda, you think for a minute that I need you to talk to me, to tell me what you need? He puts me in my place a lot, but he does it with kindness. I need it. Do you think for a minute that I need you to tell me what you need or what so-and-so needs? So that's when I learned to shut my mouth and just be. It's some of my favorite times of intimacy now, by far. Have no agenda but to simply be with him. I just said that. Enjoy nature together. This is a big one for a lot of people. Journaling your thoughts and listening for his response and recording his response. Sharing with other like-minded friends your experience with Yahweh. Transformation takes time, so give yourself the time that it takes. Amen. Any questions, comments, observations? Paul in the back. Al? Al's back on duty.
There's a lot here. Thank you for covering it. As you're going through the slow track and the fast track, and I'm going back to my career and how I solve problems, and I would ponder and work on a problem sometimes until, what's that? It's on, right? Yeah. Okay. What's that? Okay. All right, I'm kind of slow sometimes. All right. And I would try to solve a problem. I'm using this, I think, the left brain. And nearly every time, you know, when I would need a breakthrough, I'd just take a break, sleep on it. And the next day, usually, there's the insight that comes, and it's just like, then, man, you're just on a different plane. So that's one. The other one is... in group setting, and you probably heard the term mastermind alliance. Have you ever read Napoleon Hill's book, Think and Grow Rich? It was about 100 years ago he wrote this. Yeah, and it's a lousy title because the book is so much about how your brains work. This is before all the brain science came, but He had that concept of mastermind alliance. It's used all over business now, but where you get different brains coming together, and if you're trying to solve a problem, how that they start operating at a speed far beyond what individual brains. So both of those, I'd like to have you any insight on how the working as an individual, because a lot of this is relational, but I'm talking as an individual, I'm working on solving a problem, and I see both sides of the brain doing what they do, and without even having anybody else present. So I'd just like to hear your thoughts on any or all of that.
Everything you said is true. The point that I want to drive home is if our master fast track brain is shut down, we are going to see the problem as bigger than the people. And that's where people get overlooked. They're not appreciated, you know, they'll get run over, et cetera, if you're not careful, because that master track is where you treat people as more important than the problem. So it all depends on if you want to be project, you know, results oriented, or do you want to be people oriented? And in order to be people oriented, you have to have that master track running. Now in business, most secular businesses, people are a means to the end, and the end is dollars, accomplishing a task, getting it done. So that is an important, the fast track master is not important to them. So it all depends. Believers, we should not be dollar-minded or result-minded above people. So, yeah.
So that poses, you know, something for here. Here we live on this farm that we have all these things that we do, and it's a very, very fine line to walk on in times when we are push come to shove. And, you know, we're under time crunch to get things in the garden before it rains or whatever. And so there are those times that we have to say, you know, I have to say, we got to push through. We might have to work later or whatever, but to still see the person in their heart in the midst of, because it can't be, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it can't be totally where everything is stopping all the time. Like, we have to figure out how to have that balance to see people, see their heart, walk them through it, and keep moving as best we can.
And one of the functions of a general protector leader is to know his or her people, to know what they're capable of, and to push them a little bit further than they think they can go. And then to also, in doing that, to be willing to accept the pushback they might get or the negative talk they might get or the result that they might get. Be willing to lay your being liked or talked good about for the benefit of another person. And then also in that, to know when somebody's reached their limit and say, oh, your capacity for this is not, I've put too much on your plate. And I've had that happen. And I recognized it where I see the result and the fruit is not Yahweh good. It's actually harming that person or their family or the people they're with because they're not able. It's impossible in some cases for them to do what they want to do even. A lot of times it's because they want to do this XYZ, but Z put them over the top. And so as a general protector leader, I have to come in and say, oh, this is not good for you. This is too much for you. And you're more important to me than getting this job done. So it's a fine line, and again, we have to keep the people more important than the job. And if I look at a situation and I see that people are being harmed or not getting what they need because I've asked somebody to do XYZ, then that's out of order. And I have to pull it and say, no, these people are way more important than you doing this over here. Or, and that's a general protector leader. And if I don't do that, then I'm going to harm the people. And that's the last thing a general protector leader is to do. It is a fine line here, especially right now. You know, the Lord has flipped who we are from being primarily a hospital that teaches and trains to being first and foremost. He said it really clearly. Now you're going to be a training center that has a hospital. So now we're doing what we're doing. He said, do the intensives. So this year we're going to have three of them, Lord willing, and three of these. And he told us, he said, and I'll bring you those that need training. I'll bring them to you here. So we have less residents than we've ever had, except for in the very beginning, first year. So our maintaining our gardens and our orchard and our chickens and our cows and our horses and our, what else, goats, that's a lot. And the Lord is helping us, and we're being stretched, and we're having to, he's testing us, going to keep the people more important than the job getting done. And it's a fine line. It keeps us in a place where we have to keep constantly, Lord, what do you say? What do you say? And adjusting according to what he instructs us to do. Anybody else? Okay, everybody's in their fast track brain. You just took that all in. You're doing good. Great. All right, Cindy, you had an announcement. Huh? What? Yeah.
You.
We have two Cindys, so Cindy G.
So, what a timely announcement I have. I'm inviting all of you to be stretched this afternoon. We have some things that we could use some help with this afternoon, if you can possibly come out. There's plenty of things to do that are low impact, not heavy. We need twigs. You know, we've pruned all the orchard trees, so we're talking twigs. That just need to be raked up, picked up, get them out so I can get in there and mow next week because the grass is getting long. We have garden prep we're doing. We have our dear puppies, Max and Ruby. We've been trying to get this big orchard fence reinforced at the low level for them because they're escape artists. And we have two sections left to do, and it's really sitting or standing and tying with wire or whatever. And we could use your help because the rain's coming Friday, and I heard it's supposed to rain over the weekend. So if you possibly can, do what you can do. Do not push, go too hard, but we'd love to have you join us out there. We can meet at in front of the big garden at 1-ish, and anybody that wants to work in the garden can, and then we have the other projects. So we'll be out there and hopefully see some of you.
Amen. Okay, Father, thank you so much for today. Thank you for your helping us understand and see and know what, how you've made us and how you've created us to be, and for giving us tools so that we can be more like you, spirit, soul, and body. We ask that you bless our time together at lunch, bless our afternoon worshiping you through work. That's a worship word. And we thank you for helping us in this thing called life, one day at a time. We bless you, Lord. We love you. And we're so, so, so grateful for your kindness. In Yeshua's name we pray. Amen.